Good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 11th of March. Very nice to have you with us, and we do hope that you will stay with us as we discuss a myriad of issues this morning. We welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. There is a post for today's panel, which says simply 3/11/15. And you can click on that and comment there, and we would love to hear from you. Again, roundtable at WAMC.org if you wish to reach us directly as well. Let us introduce our panel. We'll introduce the panel, and then we'll get on to the subjects at hand. It is always a pleasure to introduce Dr. Alan Chartok to the program. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joe. One piece of sad news is our wonderful super volunteer, Risa Melendondri, has passed. We just wanted to say thank you wherever she is listening to this for everything that she did for WAMC.
Very sad. That's sad. I didn't know that. That's sad.
Yeah.
Would that come
got
in
a
this
letter
morning?
Last night.
Yeah,
what
a last night. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Thank you very much for moving your schedule around and being with us today. I appreciate it. And political consultant Libby Post joins us as well. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. Let us start by talking about the big news story from yesterday, and that was, well, we kept on saying, when is she going to say something? When is she going to say something? Well, she finally said something yesterday. Hillary Clinton went to the United Nations, of all places, and revealed on Tuesday that she had deleted about half her emails from her years as Secretary of State, saying she had turned over the Obama administration all correspondence and government business, but had erased records of communications about private matters like her yoga routines and her daughter's wedding, as well as her mother's funeral. In a news conference about her exclusive use of a private email account while secretary, Mrs. Clinton sought to squelch the furor about those communications already in its second week. She acknowledged that it would have been wiser to use a government email for official business, but she said that she had fully complied with every rule and was going above and beyond what was required of her in asking the State Department to make public much of her email correspondence. Go.
No, Libby first.
All right, Libby first.
Well, it's not too little too late, but it was too late. She should have done this. She should have gotten out in front of this immediately because it's just grown exponentially. And people who don't understand, and yes, you know, she's fully compliant with the law and all that sort of stuff, but this is going to be used regardless because they're going to say, what is she hiding? What is she hiding? Regardless of whether or not she's hiding anything.
I agree with you completely.
Oh.
And what I'm wondering is, if you are complying with the letter of the law, then why not get out the day it happened?
Right, right. That's what I don't understand about this whole situation. When you're in a crisis like this, you get out in front of it so you can control the message and control what comes afterwards as best as you can. And Mike knows that from being on the other side of that as a journalist, you know, that people like me try to do that. And it just doesn't make any sense that she took so long to respond to this. I mean, it gives the impression that some people have of her, that she's aloof, above the law, thinks she knows best. I like Hillary Clinton, but, you know, but it was just bad strategy.
Well, she's given her political opponents plenty of ammunition to go against her with, and that was a bad political move. And today, you know, as much as she asserts that she complied with the letter of the law, again, it's a parsed answer to the criticism. There is still, that is still interpretive. It says as long as you back it up on government servers, and she didn't actually do that. And now they're going to call her before the Senate committee investigating Benghazi again, closer to the time that she's announcing her candidacy. It's really backfired on her. The only good thing about it is that it did take attention off all the foreign money that went to the Clinton Foundation, which was last week's narrative that was going to hurt her. And that seems to have gotten by. So, again, there's plenty of ammunition for people who want to pile on, and people are tired of that. That's what we've just had for the last 8
years.
Well,
using the words complying to the letter of the law, you know, is what people who feel like they have absolutely no power look at and say, well, they're just trying to get away with something.
Right. And how will this play in Peoria? I know how it plays in the Beltway, but do people in the U.S. really understand the nuances here?
No.
And perhaps they don't, but what they're hearing is parsed language. Clinton's trying to
hide something.
You know, I may be the only person in the United States of America who think this is all a bunch of hooey. I do. I was reading the press clips from all over, the liberals, the conservatives. They're all just jumping on her. I think she's tough, and I like the fact that she's tough. And I like the fact that she gets up there with blood in her eye and says, leave me alone, you bunch of bullies, because that's basically what she's saying. And when the Republicans get into trouble, whether it's their favorite Bill O'Reilly or somebody else, they all say, go away, stop picking on Bill. And everybody goes away. Mm-hmm. It's extraordinary. But Hillary, that's because she's a woman.
We have a higher expectation of her.
Well, you can say anything you want. I like her. I think that is precisely the kind of talk you need from a person who's going to run this country, that, you know, you just don't allow yourself. I'll never forget when I was sitting in the Stu Ben Club and watching the television early on, when there was one, she comes on and says...
A television or the Stu Ben Club?
No, the early version of television.
Okay. In 1992 or 93.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And she comes on and says it's all a massive Republican conspiracy, mm-hmm. a great Republican conspiracy. And I thought she was exactly right, and that everybody always said, oh, that's funny that she said that.
So you don't think she botched this? You don't think she botched this by waiting a week?
Strategy.
Especially if when she said, I'm going to come out in April, I'm going to... We now see that April was going to be her date. She was going to come. She was going to announce that she's going to be president of the United States, or she's going to run for president of the United States. You don't think she botched it?
Listen, Joe, here's my feeling about this. She is the preeminent candidate for president of the United States. She scares the something out of the...
zippers.
out of these guys. Not only are they after her, they're after Joe Biden. It's a disgrace. And they're going to do anything they can to damage her. And if it wasn't this, it would be something else. They would find something else.
Yes, that's right.
They're going to make as much out of this as they can. All I can say
but
is...
But why help them?
Wait. But remember Benghazi? Well, because, Joe, my feeling is that no matter what she did, they would say, you're too early, you're too late, you're too middle. And that is why I think that... All of the critics have no idea what it's like to be up there and to be this continual target that she is. I like her.
I love her. I want her to be president. But strategically, she didn't handle this well because she's handed the opposition many, many TV commercials.
You know what you guys 10 are?
And 15
you know what you
seconds.
Guys are? You're a bunch of bleacher bums. That's what you are.
No,
you're sitting up there.
No, we're not.
This is a political consultant speaking. Let her speak.
Well, of course she is. But what am I? Chopped liver?
No, you're just a political scientist.
You're a political scientist. We heard you speak.
Mike is my knight in shining armor.
That's what I think. And they're gonna You think that because they handed her something that there isn't gonna be a thousand other somethings that they're gonna use with all that Coke money?
Sure.
Come on.
Yeah, actually, you could argue that she timed it well, in the sense that she let all the critics get everything out of their system, and then she does speak out on it. And it might quickly go away.
It might. We'll have to see. You know, but she used the opportunity also to slam the Republicans and their letter to Iran, which was a great opportunity with the backdrop of the UN, which I thought was, masterful.
Corey says, can we just please be done with the Clintons and the Bushes? Hillary has been in Washington too long. Send her home to enjoy her grandchild. We need a new set of crooks to run the show.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
I don't completely disagree with this idea that there are only two families.
The dynasties.
Yeah, the dynasties. Right. There's always two families in the country that can run the country.
And whose fault is that? And whose fault is that? And why is Andrew Cuomo the governor of New York now?
It's the people.
Because we don't know anything about state government. We don't know anything about this stuff. Irene says, let's have more hearings on the actions of Bush 41 and 43. Their actions involving American and friendly nations in illegal wars and other matters needs further investigation. I do not care how old Bush 41 is. And Jim says, newsflash, a reliable source claims Hillary Clinton has an overdue book from the Chappaqua Public Library. At this time, we do not know how long the book has been overdue or the book titles, but the town's library cop, a Mr. Bookman, is expected to hold a news conference soon. Stay tuned for full team coverage. And Karen
Very
says...
Clever.
The concern with private email is real. Security is a big problem. Moreover, no one person in the government is indispensable, and then goes on too long. Okay, thank you very much, Karen, counselor. And then Medden says, to put all this in context, every book on the Clintons seemed to address the drama and paranoia in Clinton land about secrecy and the attitude that no one is entitled to anything from the Clintons and closest advice unless in capital letters and until in capital letters the Clinton decide they want it out. The incident's bad because it confirms the narrative that the Clintons are playing by their rules. And Margaret says, Hillary, she's a survivor. TV is a vast wasteland. It's still a vast wasteland. Let the right make commercials. The right wing should use the money to help America. That's what she says. And Ted says, did George W. care what people said? No, she's acting tough like W. That's from Ted. And on and on and on.
Let me ask you this, Libby, because even in the press conference, which we can say was too late, she also, it gave her an opportunity to, I think, unfortunately, to become defensive.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it yesterday. It was on the TV, and, you know, I don't know if it was the big screen and I was so close or whatever, but she did get a little bit on the defensive side, and that's when, you know, the arguments that she was making get weakened. And
come on, you know, you become a punching bag. You become a punching bag, and you say, oh, she's being too defensive. Come on, give me a break, will you?
What, you are just Mr. Nice Guy.
I'm ticked
this
off about this whole thing.
Okay, we know. She made a mistake. That doesn't mean we don't love her.
Well, let me ask a question to the political scientist and the political consultant. Will this be a story in 2 weeks?
Hopefully
That's my
not.
Point. That is my point.
Right.
Think about Benghazi. It'll, that's what they're trying to do now.
Right.
Use this to reopen Benghazi. But Benghazi's gone.
So I think that in 2 weeks, unless there's something revelatory in those new hearings, whether she goes or not. No, because it's one of those stories that people will forget. It's over. The news cycle will go on to something else. And that's it. And, you know, what people will remember it when it's part of an attack ad during the presidential campaign.
Well, right. I think that goes back to Mike's point of that it gave a lot of ammunition.
Right. And that's the problem.
To be used in the future.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Because there's so much baggage there anyway, and they already had a lot of ammunition. They'll raise Whitewater. They'll raise everything that went on before and use it. And this is just one more thing. And that's why she has to be more strategic, more careful.
Well, I don't know. We got a brilliant letter from Michael who says, Alan is right.
Stop right there.
That's all we need to hear.
There is neither merit nor basis in the email criticism. From now till November 16th, there will be endless iterations of every sort of baseless attack, and it strikes me that Hillary has managed her political career with exceptional skill. Keep up the good work, and that's from Michael. And then
I don't believe that. I don't think. I think for someone who has been in the public eye for as long as she has been, that the managing of the political career with exceptional skill, if she had done so, she would have been president of the United States.
In 2008.
And you'd be the president of NPR right now.
Well, no. What I'm saying is that there were missteps from the very beginning in that campaign, and what you see is missteps already being made in this time, especially within 6 weeks of when she's expected to announce her running.
Just spell my name right.
Right. That's right.
Right.
That's all that really matters in the long run.
That is all that really matters in the long run. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about other stuff. And we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also go to WAMC.org/roundtable. If you look, you'll see a posting for today's panel, which is dated 3/11/15, and you can click on that and post your comments, and we can all see those as well, and other people can too, and they can react to it, which is always nice. Again, roundtable at WAMC.org or WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and our discussion this morning on a wide range of issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. And as you say, as you said, Libby, before, that one of the things that came out of the one of the things that came out of the press conference yesterday was Hillary taking on the senators who wrote the letter to Iran. And meanwhile, we learned yesterday that, well, not surprisingly, Democrats are ticked.
Mm-hmm.
And are denouncing the GOP letter. And they excoriated the open letter sent to Iran's leadership warning about a nuclear agreement with President Obama. But the 47 Republicans who signed it remained defiant and unapologetic, saying that the president should have seen their opposition coming.
Well, I have to say I was shocked by the New York Daily News calling them traitors in like 200-point type, if not more. It must have been like 500-point type across the cover, being very clear about it. They have violated the Logan Act from 1799, which nobody really pays that much attention to. However,
like communicating with a foreign
right,
adversary.
Right.
But, except Mr. Logan.
Right. That's right. But constitutionally, we only have one president, and that president is empowered to negotiate with foreign leaders. And this is, again, just another way of undermining the presidency and the president without...
That they would follow a brand new senator, Tom Cotton, who's been there a couple of weeks,
Ten
and
minutes.
All sign on. Well, 46 others sign on to his letter rather than it come from the established
Mitch
leadership.
Mitch McConnell signed on to the letter.
Yeah, there were some Republicans.
You say
who
that
didn't.
As if you're surprised. Yeah. Mitch McConnell.
No, I'm just
the man
saying,
who told
yes.
us that his only job was to get rid of Obama.
Right, right.
He signed
right,
on to the letter.
Right.
Yes, but there were some Republican senators who did not sign on,
yes.
and they
yes.
chided their colleagues and said maybe it would have been better to criticize the Secretary of State in the White House and perhaps advise them rather than going directly to Tehran with your
yes.
communications.
It is unbelievable.
It's a connection.
It is so offensive
right.
that it has the back of my neck is broken out into
hives.
You know, no, not hives, but my hair
the
is
hair.
Standing out
straight
out as a result of, and they're getting away with it.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, they're getting away with it. It's just extraordinary to me that they pull that kind of thing.
Her voice shaking with rage, Senator Debbie Stabenow
yes.
of Michigan said that while she had opposed the war in Iraq, quote, I never would have sent a letter to Saddam Hussein.
That was a great quote. I mean, that's exactly what
yes.
this is. This is communicating with their counterparts over the right wing over
right.
in Iran.
Right.
I mean, it's almost collaboration with the enemy.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? And Alan,
yes.
I think let's see. I see if this makes sense to you. Because I've seen this presented in the media as two ways, and I don't know how important this is to discuss, but I'm just curious about it. And that is that the letter was written by Senator Tom Cotton. He's a freshman from Arkansas. So one of the things, and I think we even heard this in our comments yesterday, and some of the people who wrote in say, you know, you guys are dissing the Republicans for coming up with a creative way of furthering the dialogue. And my question is,
really?
do we look at Senator Cotton's action as a creative way of advancing this issue, or B, that as a freshman senator, he was set up as sort of the guy to write the letter?
Well, it's possible they were trying to advance the guy. I doubt it because, you know, they have long terms and 6 years is a long time and who knows what happens over that time. Nevertheless, I just can't believe they didn't think about this because, you know, Americans in the end don't know a lot about government. They don't know a lot about things. But anybody who's ever fought in a war or who's been in Vietnam or who's been has got to be outraged by the idea that you would consort with the enemy this way. This is just not done. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And so to answer your question, Joe, I don't know.
Mm. I'm just curious. I mean, it seems to have a young senator come out and to have 47 or 46 other senators sign on and have that power. Is there something behind that where they say, we'll get Tom to do it?
Well, he's an Iraq war. He was looked at as one of the bright up-and-comer Republicans.
Really?
He's an Iraq war veteran, very well-spoken, good-looking,
yeah.
You know.
Right.
And maybe they're trying to...
put a face to it.
Yeah. And he said that he felt that the Republicans had been advised by Iran experts that the Iranians may not understand that constitutional issue and therefore felt it was necessary to clarify it for them. Come on.
Yeah.
I agree
yeah.
with you.
I love it.
Like they don't. Oh,
just
man.
Want you to let you know the president has a term limit, yeah. but will be here long after he's gone.
Yeah, that's
like
so
they
really don't
know you want
to
deal with us. That's what the letter
And by the way,
said.
Tom wrote, why aren't these Nimrods under indictment?
Well,
I agree. You know, this is the second act of the Benjamin Netanyahu visit.
Right.
This is the sequel. It is right. now. It's very interesting that the election in
yeah.
Israel.
I read this morning in the foreword that
not only in the foreword but in the New York Times too. You know, the polls are now showing his opponent,
right.
Herzog, a little bit ahead.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's extraordinary, and based not on the speech at the United Nations, but more on the fact that nobody can pay for an apartment over there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's always the economy, stupid, isn't it?
Yeah, it always is the economy.
Another Clinton quote.
That's right.
Jim Carville.
Clinton era quote.
Right.
Anthony says, the letter is so despicable, I am nauseous. I believe Joe Biden was right. This undermines not just President Obama, but any future president, Republican or Democrat. It's really a new low, and that's saying something.
Well, if we've accomplished anything this morning, at least we got to say Nimrod on the air.
Well,
is that against the rules?
No, I think
because I don't exactly know what a Nimrod is.
Isn't that the town that the ISIS went into and tore down all the temples and structures?
No. That was Mosul, but but they were Nimrods for doing it.
Maybe somebody ought to look
all
it up.
All right.
And there's a fatwa by somebody against ISIS from doing this. But then I just read this morning that now they're targeting the pyramids in Egypt. They want those to come down.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it's like just the nuclear option over there. It's just, let's get rid of everything. It's
all right. So let us move on to other issues and talk about the city manager in Ferguson. I guess this is not a big surprise, but he resigned yesterday, last night, actually, after the Justice Department had this just blistering report and blamed the city manager for overseeing the financially driven policies that led to widespread discrimination and questionable conduct by the police and courts. He agreed to resign. The announcement came during a city council meeting on Tuesday after about a week. When the Justice Department report was released, the manager, John Shaw, has held the post since 2007. He was the city's most powerful official.
Hmm. Well, obviously, there's a lot going on here that we're not exactly sure of. I mean, you know that there are an awful lot of people who get out of positions before they're indicted. They get out of position. I'm not saying he was going to be. I'm just simply saying that, you know, you got your wife at home and says, Alan, you don't really need this. You know, get out of here. This is just too dangerous now. You have the report coming out. Eric Holder speaks on it. The chief goes. Everybody else goes. The guy who's supervising the chief goes. It makes great sense to me that everybody's bailing now.
Well, there has to be a change at the top.
Right.
And this is a fall guy. The council voted 7-0 to sever his contract with them. And, you know, when there's been such an excoriating, detailed report about the embedded racism in the entire running of Ferguson, it seems like getting rid of the city manager is the first step towards rebuilding what has to be rebuilt, mm-hmm. don't you think?
But yes, but there is this institutional racism that permeates all levels of government in our country. This is an example of it on a local level, you know, and you can take some leaps or connect some dots to the way the man in the White House is being treated because he's a person of color. And, you know, while I'm sure people are going to go crazy around this, there is a connection because it's all about institutional racism and not wanting people of color to have their full rights in this country. And this is a perfect example. To go after poor people with tickets to make money off the poor who are already paying taxes is just unconscionable.
Mm-hmm. Well, just while we're this little moment here of taking it easy.
were you taking it easy? I don't know.
So Greg says, Nimrod. According to my memory, Nimrod was the hunter descendant of Noah.
That is true. It's a biblical reference.
He was also the architect of the Tower of Babel. As a side note, Bugs Bunny often inappropriately called Elmer Fudd a Nimrod. And that's from Greg.
And I just got an email saying, yeah. I think, giving me the same type of definition from the love of my life as soon as it comes up on my screen.
Oh, there you go.
There we go. Yes.
Idiot, moron, stupid are all synonyms.
And Timothy says, I wonder if Mrs. Clinton is criticized because she's a woman. I wonder if she's widely admired because she's tough. It's no wonder she's attacked mostly by Republicans. Disappointing you defend her because she's the big Democrat. More sincerity, please. Well, you may be right, Timothy, but trust me, I couldn't be more sincere.
Literally, a Nimrod is a skillful hunter.
Yes.
North American, it's an inept person. All so right. There you go. All
right. I'm so just glad it wasn't dirty.
No,
we're all cleared.
And that we don't lose our license.
Yes. Right.
Let's take a break. So, we'll be back and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home, 2 to 24 hours a day, so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, intermhealthcare.com. And Hinckley Allen, combining legal strategy with business goals to help address clients' legal needs with offices in Albany and throughout the Northeast, hinckleyallen.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning, the strange, fraught saga of the song Blurred Lines, 2013's most notoriously popular single, has finally come to a conclusion, a very rich conclusion. A Los Angeles jury decided Tuesday that, yes, songwriters Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams ripped off Marvin Gaye's 1977 hit Got to Give It Up and awarded Gaye's family $7.4 million in compensation. That amounts to about a dollar for every copy of the smash pop hit sold. It ultimately raked in $16 million in profit, with Thicke and Williams each earning about $5 million.
Could somebody explain this to me? Because what exactly did they take?
Put on your headphones.
If you listen,
okay. Put on your headphones.
Okay, then you have to put on.
Yeah, put on your headphones.
Number three.
And
go,
then we're
three.
Gonna. Okay. All right. Yeah. We'll get everybody set up here. And you at home don't need headphones, by the way. This will all be set for you.
Fasten your seatbelts.
Okay. Here we go. So let's first play the Marvin Gaye song. And this is what ultimately was a apparently ripped off. Got to give it up. 1977. Give you a little taste of that. I know, Alan, you'll be putting that on your playlist on your iPod.
That was
for
awful.
Your, for your workout in the morning. It's Marvin Gaye, for God's sake.
Marvin Gaye was great.
Okay.
It's not awful. It's Motown.
All right. Now.
It's our history. Yes,
now,
man,
let's go to 2013, Blurred Lines, Pharrell and Robin Thicke.
Everybody get up.
All right, so you can see the similarities, yes?
I thought that was awful, too.
Okay. You can see the similarities.
Both were awful.
That yes. They're both awful? No.
No.
We can see the similarities. Okay. So this got complicated. It got sticky when the family of Marvin Gaye came out and said, look, you obviously ripped off this song. And by the way, you can do this and do it as an homage
right.
if you simply note it and they get a cut.
They should have said that.
And that's all they had to do.
Well,
that's
you know, all the they Supreme had to do. Court and everybody else has been allowing everybody to rip it off and say if it's sarcastic or if it's parody.
Okay,
you can use everybody
but they're saying
stuff.
This is a direct ripoff. Okay, it gets sticky. It gets sticky because Robin Thicke says, who is responsible for one of the co-writers of the song, in his deposition said, quote, "You know, I don't really remember writing the song because I was high on Vicodin and alcohol." Okay.
That's a great defense. I don't remember robbing the bank because I was high.
That didn't help. It doesn't help.
Reminds me of one of the great defenses we've
And
heard,
then
like
Pharrell
Twinkies.
and Robin Thicke got into a shouting match with each other, blaming each other, saying, well, you did it. No, you stole it. And that went back and forth. I think they both end up paying $1 million in the end in this.
Didn't they also acknowledge that they were inspired as writers by Marvin Gaye?
Yes.
And Alan, you're a musician.
I am a
you're
very
a
good
folk
one.
Musician.
Well, no, I'm a trumpet player, as you probably know.
Well,
yes.
I play with the Satellites for Music Out of This World for many years.
Now, isn't folk music inspired by other folk music? Isn't
Absolutely.
That a generally acknowledged
no.
pattern?
Both Woody and Pete had said over and over again, there's a famous Woody quote that Pete has always used, "Oh, he stole from me, but I steal from everybody." You know, so yeah. So
I mean, the blues artists will say that also.
So what's new?
And, you know, Robert Johnson's songs are kind of played by everybody.
Well, what's new is that they awarded this staggering amount of money.
Well, that'll be appealed, and the amount will be lowered.
Well, the other part of this is that it's getting harder and harder for musicians. Well, there is that. But it's harder and harder for these folks to make money because of all the pirating and all the money that's lost when people share music and all that sort of stuff. Not that I have any sympathy for either one of them in terms of they can't afford to pay up for these things. But there is that part of this story here. But you know, the song is so clear that there's such a relationship between the two. And there was another thing, a story where Sam Smith, who I really don't listen to at all,
yes,
stole a Tom Petty song. And he's right. had to pay a little and give them credit.
Yeah, and so, Spirit, the group right. Spirit was recently in the news because they claim that Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin was a ripoff of one of their songs, and they used to tour with Spirit as the backup.
That's a little old, opening though. Act. I mean, give me a
Well, think of George Harrison. He's so fine, my sweet right. Lord. You can sing them right next to each other, except there's no duang right. in My Sweet Lord. But, you know, we are inspired, and subliminally, I guess, we pick up beats and we pick up melodies that we've heard, and that seems like all songs are composites, aren't they?
To some degree. You know, I have a feeling it's going to be overturned, but we'll see.
Yeah, I always thought there's just so many combinations of notes that you can make, and
that's
there's
right.
bound to be repetition at some point.
But again, if you, and this is to Mike's point, if you in your deposition and in your remarks say that you were influenced by the song and then you don't credit the song so that they also get points, if you will.
Look at the Lone Ranger.
Are you theme for the Lone Ranger?
Yeah, the William Tell
Overture.
Is that what you meant?
That's exactly what
okay,
I meant.
Okay, all right. Just checking.
You what about it. The serial that was shot from guns?
Yeah. What about that?
The what?
The 1812 Overture used to be the Quaker
right.
Puff Wheat and Puff Rice commercial.
Oh, you're right.
We are old.
All right. We have 3 minutes, so let's end on this. Utah has just become the only state to allow execution by firing squad.
Another reason to stay in New York.
Yeah, it's they had that until 2002 when they outlawed it. It was acceptable. Remember, the killer Gary Gilmore had that option to choose the firing squad, and he died. I think they put 7 bullets in 8 guns or something, you know, and they put a blank in, so one of them may not have shot the guy. You know, there's all these rituals about it so that the gunmen don't know who got the blank, and they don't know for sure if they were the one that didn't fire into the guy. But it'll go to court, and it'll be argued whether this, in fact, going before a firing squad does amount to cruel and unusual punishment. And that'll be the debate.
Mike, and it seems, from my understanding of this, is that because it was overturned, as you said, early in 2002 or was overturned for lethal injection. And now what they're saying is that this would be used as a backup, correct? Am I right on that?
When the drugs aren't – more and more drug companies
are not
just
available.
Last week are now not allowing their – painkillers to be used for lethal injections by states.
Or when the drugs that they do give them don't work, then they'll take them out to the yard and shoot them.
That's unbelievable.
And so instead of putting them on the drugs on back order, they will...
It's insane.
Well, I mean, the whole idea of capital punishment, you know, we're one of the few countries in the world that where it's legal, in one sense, it brings it to the forefront and lets the discussion happen again, and perhaps maybe it'll advance the notion of being more humane. Yes.
I only have 2 words. Joe Hill.
Joe Hill died of a firing squad?
You bet. That's how they got him.
They shot you, Joe,
says I. It takes more than guns to kill a man.
That's right.
You see, I never died.
That was before the electric chair was widely used.
No.
With that, we'll let those be the last words of our program. As much as I just like to go out on
on a happy note
with Marvin Gaye, I guess we'll stick with this.
Maybe you can play a little more of that.
Yeah, can we play more Marvin Gaye going out? Excellent. It's the roundtable panel. You can comment roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, Mike, Libby, thank you very much for being with us, and we'll be back and continue our discussion on other stuff after this.